This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. They have beautiful book page posters that have passages from some of our favorite fantasy series like The Lord of the Rings and A Song of Ice and Fire and Harry Potter. They even have the Night's Watch vows with the Three-Eyed Crow. They also have Targaryen, Stark, and Baratheon bookmarks. You should really go check them out. It's 4Cats Boutique on Etsy and get yourself some bookmarks and amazing artwork. That's the number 4 and cats with a K. 4Cats Boutique on Etsy. This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Sir Jimmy of House Nuts, Master of the Web, Lady Dawn of House Wright, Sir Chris of House Farber, Lady Tracy of House Faw, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys and Lady of Jameson, Lord John of House Fry, Lady Juliana of House Stradley, Sir David of House Fraser, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry, Lady Madeline of House Fritzel, Lady Adrian of House Dillard, Lady Ashley of House Gardner, Lady Lismelin of House Morales.
This episode of Bend the Knee is protected by Sir Ryan of House Turbush, Lady Sarah the Unraveler.
Our current champion is Lady Kira of House Arnold.
Our current Master of Coin is Lord Jason of House Ross.
Squire to Sir Matt, Lady Betsy of House Hudson.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're into Brand 7 of A Clash of Kings.
Yes, this is the final chapter of A Clash of Kings, my friend.
Yeah, yeah. Matt, if we're not careful here, we might just catch up to, you know, the end of the series. If we're going, our pace, seriously, we're outpacing George R. R. Martin. So it's scary, man.
It is. It absolutely is. But you know what? The Clash of Kings is great. And then, wow, the next chapter, right, in the Storm of Swords, boom, that's when everything kicks off. But yeah, that might be a little delayed, Ez, for us, yeah, because I think we mentioned this before. But after this week, we're going to take a little bit of a brief pause from the A Song of Ice and Fire, I guess, main line, and we're gonna go back actually and start covering some stuff from Fire and Blood, World of Ice and Fire, to sort of just get this stuff done, because we don't know exactly, we don't know when House of the Dragon is coming out. We know it's coming out sometime in 2022. I'm thinking it's gonna be earlier in the year, March, April, but it could be September, who knows. But we're just gonna go ahead and start covering some of that stuff, because it's what everybody's asking right now. Hey, what about Fire and Blood? What about Fire and Blood? What about House of the Dragon? Okay, here we go.
Right, everyone's asking about it. And we do know that that House of the Dragon, I would say, we can pretty confidently say that it's coming out before Winds of Winter. So I think, yes, we've got some
guarantee
time,
that.
Right? It's like, what we can take our time here. And I think this will be really good. If you're interested in the show and you're going to watch it, let's be honest, if you're listening to this podcast, you're going to watch House of the Dragon. We're all going to watch it. It's going to be awesome. We're going to have our bannermen on live. That's been a great thing. Now that we have another feature, we use StreamYard, we can just pop you guys right in for some live stuff after the show, like that, be on the actual feed. So we want to get folks ready in terms of what happened during the Dance of Dragons. What are the deviations from the source material, and where and which are they showing us maybe more than what Martin did, or filling in the gaps that he left? So it's important for us to go back and kind of refresh our memories a little bit with some of those names and what the houses are doing and things like that. And by the way, we have a great video over on our YouTube where you guys can go check that out. And we will be on Gray Area. Just a heads up for that. We'll be on talking about, I think, mm-hmm, we're talking about the houses.
Yes. Actually did a video on that on our YouTube, by the way. Maybe it's a little bit shorter, but I could maybe just release that on the podcast. I know it's shorter, but just so that way, because I know some people just listen to the podcast, some people, mm-hmm, just watch YouTube. So perhaps I will do that as well. But yeah, just sort of going over what's going on in each of the houses, right?
Yeah.
During House of the Dragon, because there's definitely a lot of interesting things in that we're going to see a lot of new houses we're not as familiar with. And, right. you know, like House Valerian. Mm-hmm. They're not in. We don't really see them in the Song of Ice, in the main A Song of Ice and Fire, you know, Game of Thrones sort of theory or right. Books, I should say. So it's going to be it's cool to sort of go through that. Then there's some weird oddities like the Tullys. You got Oscar. Right. You got Kermit. You got Elmo.
God dang, dude. That's crazy. Are they keeping those names? Well, we can talk about
I
that
hope
later.
So. I hope so. Too, I don't know. I don't know.
Sir Kermit. Lord Kermit. You know, God. Well, anyways, yeah, that'll be fun. So also wanted to mention, so I told Sir Matt before we started this that I just did, you know, I don't normally type in. Normally, Sir Matt keeps me up to date on the news and what's going on. He sees stuff all over the Matt. I call myself Sir Ezra the Watchful, but really I think we need to switch titles because Matt's always checking the Reddits, the news sources, all these things. But I did a quick Google search here just to kind of see what we have. And the first four articles pop up. I'm just going to read the, I want to read the titles of these
right ahead,
to you.
Read them.
So 16 hours ago, Game of Thrones author hasn't revealed who wins Iron Throne in the books. This is Screen Rant talking about the fact that George R. R. Martin has not actually revealed who wins the Iron Thrones. Throwing in the books, and I'm like, well, you know, did they change that? I mean, sorry, this is just some funny stuff. So also 21 hours ago, George R. R. Martin worried Game of Thrones wasn't following, quote, his template. Okay, this is all breaking news, right? let me see. That's what was the other one? It's so crazy, dude. Let's see.
I mean, oh, I don't. What do we have to do to get a job to work at Screen Rant? And I will go. And I will go on record and say that they're a bunch of amateurs over there. And because literally all they do is just post sort of clickbait stuff. That's like, it's like not even news. You know, I don't know.
Right, right.
Maybe we should get on that. I mean, as it seems like there's probably good money in it. Maybe.
I mean,
maybe
I'm clicking on it. Yeah, I'm clicking on
You're
it. So
Captain
maybe
clickbait
it's
himself. So I mean,
yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Jeez, a cow. And the last one here, this one kind of leads us into just a little plug here for the Matinez Media Network, our empire. But this is an article from Entertainment that says these shows are battling to be the next Game of Thrones. They have listed at the top, at least they have this, The Wheel of Time is listed there at the top. His Dark Materials, don't know much about it, haven't seen it. The Witcher is in there at number three. Shadow and Bone, which I did watch. It was pretty cool. Carnival Row? Don't really.
I've heard of that, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. And so, yeah, there's a couple other ones. I've The Nevers. I don't know. Yeah, anyways, and they've even put the MCU in there. So, anyway, I just thought it was interesting. Wheel of Time is doing a great job, by the way. If you are interested in that, I know a lot of our listeners here went over and followed Heroes of the Horn. And we're having a lot of fun. It's just current right now, so I wanted to mention it. If you're into it, it's out there on Amazon, and our podcast is covering it, as well as our YouTube channel. Great fun. Been a lot of fun, and I appreciate everyone from Bend the Knee who did come over and has been hyping us up in the chat, because that's pretty awesome to see some of those familiar faces, voices, you know, pop over there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as you said, it's a ton of fun doing that as well. And just plug it again, just why not, because we're at the top of the show. As I did also start a Harry Potter podcast.
Let's go.
Called the Elder Wand. You can check that out. All, you know, your standard places. It's pretty easy to find. Going through that as well. So as I literally, at this point, we just do, it's like outside of our 9-to-5 jobs, it's just content.
It's great, man. I don't see anybody. I love it. I don't either. I have now even gone to I ordered Chipotle today and I ordered some coffee, and I was talking to Lottie and she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't want to see anybody. Like I'm going out. I'm hoping to duck in the store, grab my bag, roll out, get my coffee, roll out. And I don't talk to anybody because I got to get back so I can make some content. You know, got some editing to do because we love it. We love having fun with this kind of thing. And it's just like, it brings up the Elder Wand brings up some really good memories. We had those first couple episodes been freaking hilarious. And hey, by the way, today I competed in the House Cup, the Christmas at Hogwarts House Cup in the Wizarding World situation over there. So I had Lottie on and we did like our whole thing. It's just fun. I'm a total nerd and I've always been a nerd, you know, and I just love embracing that. I want more people to feel comfortable doing that, you know, just talking to friends, people at work, just entertainment, books, stories, all of it. It's fun. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, as so we don't have a raven for later today, because we're just going to kind of do, I think, a recap of A Clash of Kings, just sort of what we liked, what we didn't. But let's go ahead and dive into the chapter here. So Jojen wakes Bran from a wolf dream and warns him that he's spending too much time as Summer, and that while the wolf eats in the dreams, Bran does not. Bran informs them that Winterfell has been burned to the ground, and it's all ash except for the stone walls. They have been hiding in the crypts for all this time, trusting Bran's vision. They decide it is now safe to come out of hiding. Hodor moves a massive stone blocking off the door of the crypts, and they indeed find Winterfell in ashes. They find several of Theon's Ironmen dead, along with men bearing the badge of the Dreadfort. The direwolves rejoin them and lead them to Maester Luwin, who lies near death in the Godswood, which is still largely untouched. Jojen says, "There is power in living wood, a power strong as fire." The Maester is thankful that the boys are still alive, although he knew that Theon had killed the Miller's boy from their looks, but had never revealed his knowledge to Theon. Maester Luwin admits that he is dying and provides his last advice. He tells Osha not to send the boys off together. They are Robb's heirs, and they must be separated. Osha asks him where to bring the boys, but Luwin is unsure. With the Ironmen to the west, the Bastard of Bolton to the east, and war everywhere, each man against his neighbor, and winter is coming. Such folly, such black mad folly. Maester Luwin tells Bran to be strong, that he is his father's son, and then asks a boon of Osha, and the wildling woman sends the others away. When she returns, it is decided that Bran will go north in search of the Crow with Jojen, Mira, Hodor, and Summer, while Osha will take Rickon and Shaggy Dog south, perhaps to White Harbor. As Bran looks upon Winterfell for perhaps the last time, he thinks to himself, the stone is strong, the roots of the trees go deep, and under the ground, the kings of winter sit their thrones. It's not dead, just broken, much like Bran himself.
Yeah. Well, this chapter, the crazy thing is, it's not really like, so Bran has this premonition, if you will, and his dream earlier about the attack that would happen here at Winterfell. And so we get to see, he comes out here, and he sees the whole thing. We're going to get to this point. We'll go through it chronologically, but I want to mention one line that comes up later. It's Jojen. Every time Jojen comes up, I ask myself, can we trust him? Why do we trust him so much? Does he actually become paste later on? All these different things, right? But he does say something interesting in this chapter, and we'll get to it here in a little bit, but I'm going to read it for you right now. So he says, there is a power in living wood, a power strong as fire. And it's like, so we're going to get to like the Godswood and all of this. But again, this is George. I feel like in this chapter drops a lot of different lines about iron, about powers, about Hodor. Like there's tons of little tiny things in this chapter that allude to stuff that happens later on, which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, this chapter isn't very big. It's not a very big chapter to begin with. But yeah, as you said, there is quite a bit. I'm gonna pull it up here. I know there's a part where Hodor. So for starters, yes, Bran, a voice was whispering softly, Bran, come back here, come back now, Bran. He closed his third eye and opened the other two, the old two, the blind two. In this dark place, all men were blind, but someone was holding him. He could feel his arm. He could feel arms around him, the warmth of a body snuggled close. He could hear Hodor singing Hodor, 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 quietly to himself. Bran, it was Mira's voice. You were thrashing, making terrible noises. What did you see? Winterfell. His tongue felt strange and thick in his mouth. One day, when I come back, I won't know how to talk to any. I won't know how to talk anymore. It was Winterfell. It was all on fire. There were horse smells and steel and blood. They killed everyone, Mira.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's getting... One day, when I come back, I won't know how to talk anymore.
And we see in the show, I don't know, again, like, that's he comes back and really doesn't say much, does he?
No.
I mean, that's a showism. If you call it what you want, I know you guys don't like that. Some people don't like that we bring up the showisms. But I mean, right there's a line in the text that somewhat correlates to what they showed us in the show, which was somewhat derived from what George R. R. Martin said would happen. You know what I mean? So interesting, I guess.
Yeah. One day when I come back, I won't know how to talk anymore. You know, that's a line that I don't really see thrown around Reddit or anything. Is it just because he's going to become the Crow?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's just.
Yeah, or is it a reference to Hodor, who's mentioned a few lines before? Because Hodor doesn't know how to talk.
Oh, he is too. God. I mean, they are connected. Yeah, that's interesting. He does. Because there's a whole bit too where he and Hodor, every time he goes inside, skin changes or whatever, slips inside of him, it's like he almost is becoming, like their thoughts are intermingled.
Right. He could hear Hodor singing Hodor, Hodor, Hodor quietly to himself. Bran, it was Mira's voice. You were thrashing, making terrible noises, which
is the same thing Hodor was doing.
Right. Which, again, is only in the show. But I mean, that of all of the things, I mean, I would love to hear, actually, people who are only book theorists. What do you think happens to Hodor? Is there any possibility that it goes in a different direction? Because I'm saying no.
Than the show, right? Yeah. I think there'll be more details, right? For sure, we'll get something about because there's a lot of people theorizing that Hodor has feelings towards Mira, or it was Bran in Hodor that caused some of those feelings. There's a whole theory about what's happening in the cave or when they were anytime he's tried to rescue her in Hodor's skin. So there is some sort of residue, like essence residue left over, maybe happening. It seems like, cause it seems like you can lose yourself a little bit, or Varamyr talks about it when you're skin changing, some of the dangers, like losing oneself almost in other animals or beast. And then the dangers of slipping in with someone else who has a mind, a soul, and a body. Right. And occupying that same space is dangerous. And what are the long-term consequences and effects of that? Maybe George R. R. Martin will give us more of that in Winds of Winter. Maybe.
Right. I'm going to real quickly while you're, I'm going to go see if I can find theories, Hodor theories from like 2012 and stuff, well before the show affected
it. See if anybody had it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you go do that. Cause the next bit here is, essentially we have, Jojen just talking Bran through the idea that, that he's been with Summer. Been with Summer too long, you'll starve yourself. Mira dribbled a little water down your throat and we smeared honey on your mouth, but it was not enough. I ate, Bran said. We ran down an elk and had to drive off a tree cat that tried to steal him. So the wolf ate, Jojen says, right? But you're not taking care of yourself. You have to remember who you are. He remembered all too well. Bran the boy, Bran the broken, better Bran the beastling. He was thinking to himself. So he's struggling with this. He almost is prone to wanting to be taken away or enveloped into a direwolf, or later on could be Hodor, all those things. Because we're going to talk about how here in a second, Hodor is the only one who can lift this iron lock or this lever, this gate to get them out. But yeah,
here we go. Here's a Hodor theory from when was this? 7 years ago? So that would be what?
14
minus seven. So 2014. Okay.
Yeah.
So the episode aired in 2016. So I just wanted to make sure I had my math right. So this is a top theory on the Search of Ice and the Song of Ice and Fire subreddit, which is where, you know, there's the best place really to go for any sort of theories. Bran will discover a way of unleashing Hodor's intellectual potential as his own. Warging abilities grow and he taps into the mind block that keeps Hodor simple-minded as a traumatic incident from Hodor's past or deliberate curse placed on the man-child.
Wow. That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome.
Other theories include Hodor is faking it all along. Hodor will be captured and carried to the lands of Always Winter in the arms of another, where he will be touched by the Night King and transformed into a, you know, into a blue-eyed monster. Hodor is the name of the Great Other, and Hodor is not mindlessly verbalizing, but is inadvertently thwarting Melisandre's attempt to keep the name under wraps. I mean, this is like ridiculous, Tim.
Wow.
Hodor is the name of one of the old gods. So these were some of the theories before the show.
Before the show. So no one had any idea, right? I mean,
No clue.
Right. Matt, there's no freaking way. And I think, again, this is George's come out and talked, right? That, yeah, that's, he gave a lot of those details on the Hodor event to the
Ned show, once confided in Hodor about R plus L equals J.
I mean,
these are some pre theories. And I think it's pretty safe to say that even though it's a showism, I think it's pretty safe to say that, we're all 100% on board with that being a thing.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, exactly. Like that's something that you can't really mess up. I mean, to explain Hodor and his name and how that all goes down, if you did it any other way, it just would be like, so what was the point of that character? It just doesn't land if you don't do it the way George wants it done, which is, I think, a bit, again, the big gripe. And I understand totally that a lot of things that happened in season 8 were not done the way he wanted them done. They had, you know, he hasn't done them himself yet, but he has an idea of how they're going to land. And they tried to pull it off differently, and it doesn't work because in the text, it's not there. There's nothing to back it up, which is why it's unfortunate. I know people get upset with the whole Danny going mad, but there's tons of stuff about the tinking, the bells and the fire and
right.
All that stuff is, there is textual evidence for it. So that's what we try to do, is we look and we say season 8, here's what happened. Arya killing the Night King. I don't know if I see a lot of evidence for that. John just being brought back to do what? To kill Danny? I mean, that kind of stuff, I don't really know. We don't have enough in the text to really support any of that. And we don't really know if that's just all showism. Is that just all the show and not really George R. R. Martin? That's what makes it tough. So,
yeah. And I'm just looking here to see anything else about it. But from everything I can, it seems like this is one where the show, I think, has pretty much convinced most people. Because there's tons of book evidence to support it. And we actually did a full podcast on that, where we break down all of the text.
Oh, all the Hold the Door.
And it's references. There's so many references to Hodor carrying Bran through doors.
Like, in this one, he opens the door. Right. I mean,
yes.
100%. Like, he's the only one strong enough to open the door. He's also the only one strong enough to hold the door. All of that is, there's tons of evidence for it. So here's something with Jojen, just while on my mind, so you're thinking about the show.
Yeah, that's fine. We can shift gears to Jojen. I'm fine with that.
Yeah. So I guess my question for you, Matt, is when, you know, in the book, we don't know. We don't really know his, like, the show, what did the show do? Did the show just let him, died? Did he even, was he just gone? I don't remember what exactly happened to Jojen in the
Jojen, he dies. He just dies.
He just dies.
He dies on the
outside the cave or
outside. There's a little path as there's like, I can't remember if they're on a lake or it's kind of just a field. And they're trying to get into the cave, and then remember Leaf shows up and she helps them destroy some of the whites that are chasing after them.
Right. Okay.
Because Jojen's injured at that point. I don't think Jojen even makes it into the cave in the show.
Holy smokes, I'm watching it right now. Yeah. Yeah, Bran gets in. The freaking little children are there.
I think they just, like, you have to leave him.
He's lost. Come with me or die with him. Yep. Yeah. And he says, go with them. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. All right, Matt, in the book, he makes it in, right? So he makes it into the cave. He's doing his own thing. I feel like there's got to be more. He's such a character of wisdom and knowledge and helping take Bran to see the Three-Eyed Crow, that there has to be some reveal where he's either been duped, he's been tricked, and he's, like, shocked by that, or he just is, like, does he, he's not all knowing, you know. Jojen is just kind of like, he knows certain things and he believes them to be true and he gets there. So like, if he's seen his own death and he sees this is not the time or not the day that I die, and he knows how he dies, there needs to be some shock in that. Like, I don't know. It was, this his only purpose is just to, he's just accept his fate to just go.
He's
up
the
there
heir. And, hey man, he's the heir to House Reed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, I guess that line will be ended unless, it depends on who Howland. Mira really is. Right. But I mean,
and if Howland is still alive.
Right. So, yeah, I think that'll also be something that really goes differently. I think people are already speculating in the book that Jojen is already dead. They believe he's just dead in the cave. And I'm like, come on, there's got to be more to it than that. He's just found dead, or he's found chopped up in a soup or something crazy. This is crazy, you know.
Yeah, the Jojen Pace stuff, that just seems weird. It seems weird to me. But then again, I don't know.
Yeah, it seems weird. I feel like we need to talk to him, and there needs to be one last sort of thing, or a shock on his face where he's been. Some people don't think he is tricked. He's a servant of the Three-Eyed Crow, and he's taking him to where he needs to be. But yeah, I don't know. That's all. That gets into all the Three-Eyed Crow stuff and whether or not Bran actually should trust the Three-Eyed Crow or all those things. So,
yeah. Okay. So we'll continue on here. Again, this chapter is incredibly short, to be entirely honest. But I do have a few things highlighted here. So, as you sort of said in the summary, right, Hodor, hey, man, Hodor can move anything. Osha gave the huge stable boy an appraising look. Might be he can. The steps were wide and narrow, so they had to climb. Osha led. Behind came Hodor with Bran Crutchlow on his back so his head wouldn't hit the ceiling. Mira followed with the torch. Around and around they went up. Bran thought he could smell smoke now, but perhaps that was only the torch. The door to the crypt was made of ironwood. It was old and heavy and lay at a slant to the ground. Only one person could approach it at a time. Osha tried once more. When she reached up, her Bran could see that it was not budging. Let Hodor try. They had to pull Bran from his basket first so he would not get squished. Mira squatted beside him on the steps. Open the door, Hodor, Bran said. The huge stable boy put both hands flat on the door, pushed and grunted. Hodor? He slammed a fist against the wood, and it did not so much as jump. Hodor, use your back, urged Bran, and your legs. Again and again, he pushes, and then he starts really getting into it. He's like, Hodor. From above came a dry rumble, then suddenly the door jerked upward, and a shaft of daylight fell across Bran's face, blinding him for a moment. Another shove brought the sound of shifting stone, and then the way was open. Osha poked her spear through and slid it out after it, and Rickon squirmed through Mira's legs to follow. Hodor shoved the door open all the way and stepped to the surface. The reeds had to carry Bran up the last few steps.
Yeah. So he's open the door, he's taking him out. I mean, it's sort of just, when you think about the end of Hodor, like, this is one of those moments where he's taking them out of a dark, shadowy, cavernous place. He's opening the door, and then later on, he'll hold the door. It just seems like George right there is doing something. Now, also, we mentioned, I remember when we were going into like the Crypts of Winterfell, this chapter comes up quite a bit because there are things, you know, when the shadows moved, it looked for an instant as if the dead were rising as well. The dead, meaning these stone statues with their stone direwolves and the swords that are laid across them as well. So that became a bigger piece as people theorized as to what's going to happen with the crypts and how much further there's a block at the back that you can't really get through. And there's this whole, you know, just, yeah, there's this whole bit that is, they list off all these different lords down here that could rise or whatever, and that there was warmth that had seeped out of their bodies. It felt like that, right? This was a dark hall of the dead where the living feared to tread. You know, George mentions all these different things about the dead feast, like the dead feasting in Winterfell and all this stuff. It's all somehow connected. Who's invited to that feast? Who's seeing the dreams? Who's not seeing them? Is all a part of it as well. So yeah, the Crypts of Winterfell are interesting. That iron, the ironwood gate or the door, right, is important because iron, and it being something that could possibly be a ward or a stopper to whites or something.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the Ironwood Trees goes ties into the what is it? House Yon Ironwood. What is the what is that house from the video game?
Because I think they're
is it how I played it? It's on the Game of Thrones. There's a Game of Thrones video game, and they basically turned it into an entire thing.
Right, all the decision making and stuff. Yeah. Let's see. Here is the Ironwood Longswords, the Starks. So the Starks traditionally place an iron longsword on the lap of each statue of the Lords of Winterfell within their crypts. This was said to keep vengeful spirits in the crypt.
House Forrester is their
Forrester,
name.
Forrester, yeah.
House Forrester. They were basically created for this video game, but their story is really cool. Mm-hmm. And the game is super cool. It's unfortunate that it never got a second. They call it a season. And most of that has to do with Telltale. I think ultimately they ended up shutting down, unfortunately. But they made really, really cool games. They went defunct in 2018. So unfortunately they didn't get it finished. But they did like Walking Dead games and stuff like that. Guardians of the Galaxy. They did one version of this, and it's really cool because it's this game, and you go through and you sort of pick your given decisions, and every decision you have makes like something else go forward. Like the decision will be important later. But yeah, so House Forrester is who they are, and they're basically the house that sort of mines, or they don't mine, but they craft the Ironwood trees. And that's sort of what they do and their source of income. And then ultimately Ramsay Bolton comes. And again, none of this is canon whatsoever, but it's just sort of an interesting thing. Ramsay Bolton comes and basically kills, one of the youngest Forrester who's like serving as the who's serving as the liege lord there for a second. Their house is in total disarray. A lot of it kind of follows the Starks, but it's really cool and it's a really fun story. And I think you can get it on Steam or PlayStation for Xbox, whatever, for probably incredibly cheap. And it's definitely worth playing because it has voice acting from the actor, like Kit Harington, Leona Heddy, everybody reprises their roles for this.
That's really cool. Like that makes it seem.
Peter Dinklage, I mean, Emilia Clarke, Natalie Dormer, everybody.
That means it's canon to me, buddy. That's funny.
Iron from Ice, which is House Forrester's. Wow. But they serve the Starks. And so the game starts at the Red Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
That's like the opening scene. And
And that's we mentioned that you said there is a lot of mention of Ironwood around Winterfell
a lot.
Yeah, north of the wall and everything too. So, so once we get out, Rickon is wanting to go home. They're all kind of like disoriented. Bran knows that it's light out as well. He knows that it's just smoke that they're seeing. So Winterfell is burning. That's something to keep in mind. Is that it's been the castle's dead and burned just as Bran dreamed, but we had best. She broke off suddenly at a noise behind them and whirled with her spear at the ready. Two lean dark shapes emerged from behind a broken tower, padding slowly through the rubble. Rickon gave a happy shout of Shaggy, and the black direwolf came bounding towards him. Summer advanced more slowly, rubbed his head against Bran's arm and licked his face. We should go. So much death will bring other wolves besides Summer and Shaggy Dog, not all on 4 feet. What? Not all on 4 feet. Other wolves? Jojen, something's up, Matt. He's in an awful hurry to get Bran out of there and to get him moving in the direction that he wants him moving, okay? How do we know that someone couldn't have showed up here and spirited him away and things have been okay? Actually, I don't know. There's just when we get to the Maester Luwin stuff, I'm gonna bring up something here too. So
let's just go ahead and dive into it. Again, this chapter's not very long. So yeah, Maester Luwin, and I think we did something about this a while ago, but Maester Luwin ultimately we decide it was our Skagos. We did a Skagos discussion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is they decide, take the boys. Jojen and Mira led Rickon out between them. Hodor followed. Low branches whipped at Bran's face as they pushed between the trees. Hodor must stay with Bran to be his legs, the wildling woman said briskly. I will take Rickon with me. We'll go with Bran, said said Jojen Reed. I thought you might, said Osha. Believe I'll try the East Gate and follow the King's Road a ways. We'll take the Hunter's Gate, said Mira. Hodor said, Hodor. They stop at the kitchen, get a little bit of food. Where will we go to your Lord Father? Bran asked, to Greywater Watch. Mira looked to her brother for the answer. Our road is north, Jojen announced. At the edge of the Wolf's Wood, Bran turned in his basket for one last glimpse of the castle that had been his life. And then basically the final line is, the stone is strong, Bran told himself. The roots of the trees go deep, and under the ground, the kings of winter sit their thrones. So long as those remained, Winterfell remained. It was not dead, just broken, like me, he thought. I'm not dead either. That's the final line of Clash of Kings.
Matt, let me say something real quick about Maester Luwin. All right, let's give him a shout out here, because with his dying breath and thoughts and whatever, he is serving House Stark. And I think it's amazing. Like, he just seems like of all the maesters, he's got to be our favorite, right? He's awesome. He's thinking through his mind. Serwin's boy dead. Sir Roderick, Tallheart, Lady Hornwood, all slain. Deepwood fallen. Moat Cailin gone. Torrhen Square, Iron Men on the Stony Shore, and East, the Bastard of Bolton. Then where? White Harbor. The Umbers, I do not know. War everywhere. Each man against his neighbor. The winter coming. Such folly. Such black, mad folly. And you must be strong now. Strong. I will. Sir Roderick killed. Maester Luwin. Everyone. Good. A good boy. Your father's son, Bran. Now go. I mean, it's just like, dude. Man, he asked Osha to kill him. I mean, it's just like to end his pain, give him the gift of mercy. It is something else. But he's thinking, just split them up. Now, where I wanted to go with the Jojen piece is, he didn't say take him to the Three-Eyed Crow. All right? He didn't say that. Jojen just does what Jojen thinks is best and what's being told to him in dreams. And I'm sorry, but I just think, again, we go back, we so trust Melisandre. And Jojen is just this boy, young boy, that is he interpreting his dreams correctly? Is he being misled? If Melisandre can be misled in the flames, then possibly he could be as well. But real quickly, as they go into the Godswood, there is power in living wood, a power strong as fire. So the weirwoods, living wood, things that live, I mean, again, they look dead, right? But, it was just interesting whether you're talking about your green power or fire power or ice power, whatever it is you want to talk about, there's power in this forest. And he talks about the soil, the water, and so on, and how it kind of kept the fire at bay. And it's just another connection to these forces, people who are using power just to push their own agenda, really, is I think what George is saying. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, it is interesting because it does often feel, and this is something we get into much more in A Storm of Swords, is Jojen's conversation that he'll have with Bran on their journey north. It's like, how do they know where to go? How do they know where to go to find the three-eyed crow?
I did a read through. So I did a point of view read through, and this might be interesting for us to try. Because I did a point of view read through of Bran. And the whole time I was just like, Jojen, you don't know. I was reading it more and more. And I just kept going like, wait, why? Like when I only read Bran and I didn't get distracted by other chapters. And I just focused on that single run through. I thought to myself, Bran questions. Jojen questions himself sometimes. Mira questions a little bit. So that's either evidence to say like, okay, maybe they are questioning. Whereas Melisandre is you know, overly confident in her own visions and premonitions that's her issue. And maybe since they are being more cautious and questioning things, they're on the right path. I don't know. I am just not so sure about the Three-Eyed Crow. I'm not so sure he's a good guy. I think, again, there's neither good guys or bad guys, right? That's what I have to get outside of my mind, because I read a lot of high fantasy where it's you either serve the light or you serve the dark, and there is no in between. There's a lot of in between in this series. Because the if you can tap into one of three powers, whether it's ice, fire, or green magic, it's using it for your own gain. It's not some higher lord or destiny or whatever. It's just like, you're just using it to acquire more land. And a lot of what George writes about is people coming across the arm of Dorne. And then in Legends, it was like they used green power to break the, you know, to bring the hammers down and to break that arm of Dorne, because they were the children. They didn't want people coming into their land. And then, you know, you've got R'hllor and you've got fire magic spreading and things like that. It's magic you can tap into, and it's how you use it and what you use it for, I think, is what I'm more and more coming towards.
Yeah.
There is no R'hllor.
Wow.
Wow. The old gods aren't real.
Okay. So, all right. So again, guys, this chapter, it's really short. The summary kind of really does some, it is almost as long as the chapter itself, to be entirely honest. So that's ultimately where we go, is that Bran is, they're going in different directions. Rickon is going to Skagos. We don't even see or hear about Rickon again for a long time until Manderly brings it up.
Right.
And to House Manderly. And so it's like, what even happens to him? Well, right. somehow he makes his way to Skagos. So there's that. So, okay. As I think we move over to just sort of the last little segment we're going to do today, which is just sort of to talk about the entire book since we've now just finished it, A Clash of Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you like? What didn't you like? What was there any storylines we would have liked to see more of, less of?
Yeah. Yeah. I've always said in this book, I really do like the King Rob, the young wolf. Love it. Freaking love it. And it's such a setup for what will be a terrible, terrible moment later on. Catelyn Tully, love Catelyn. Really, when I first read this, I got bogged down in the Tyrion stuff. I'm glad that we do the rereads and we go back, and you and I have read it numerous times now. We've gone back through just because you read ahead, then you come back. Okay, which chapter are we doing? We read it again. But there's so much stuff buried in and around King's Landing. That's where he really does the politics, right? That's where it's like there's a shift in writing style between all of the small little houses that funnel in food and resources that you have to keep close. You start to learn that, like, okay, Cersei needs some of these individuals on her small council or around her, because if there's a blockade or a siege, they need resources, they need food. And so that whole area of the Crownlands, like, it's important. Then when you shift over to like Winterfell and stuff, they're just like so far away from everything else that it's all about magic and prophecy and you know, that kind of stuff. It's different things. Bran having dreams, the three-eyed crow, and you're like, that kind of stuff doesn't really, it's not in King's Landing, right? I mean, not as much. It will be to some aspect, but it just seems like he does more of that in one region, less of it in another. And it's another kind of cool thing. It's like there's a bit for every, there's, you know, you can get carried away with all that knighthood stuff and all of the, you know, rising up in rank, or get caught up in who the heck is Bloodraven and who's the Three-Eyed Crow stuff.
Yeah. So for me, I mean, the big difference between this book and even the first book of Game of Thrones is the introduction of R'hllor. That's how this whole thing starts and the rise of Stannis Baratheon is a brand new thread. Theon, we only get a few Theon chapters, but we get to see the split and the sort of the introduction of Balon Greyjoy and a little bit more of their setup. This is the beginning of Euron and where that's all going to come from. And getting to see, to me, that I think that the Greyjoys, not Theon, but certainly Balon Greyjoy, is just a moron, in that he thinks he can sort of take over or do any damage to anyone. I still, to this day, have read the series the entire time, and I don't understand what his plan is or what his plan was.
Yeah.
I think he just wants to be independent, is ultimately what it is. Is he just wants to be an independent king. Mm-hmm. Leave me alone. I'll just continue to raid your... Like, what is his expectation, that he's just going to raid the villages and they should just be okay with it? He has no, I mean, is his plan to conquer Westeros? I mean, like, I know.
I don't understand
what his goal and purpose is.
Yeah.
And so I'm still to this day, always just baffled by Balon Greyjoy.
Well, someone, I forget,
at least Euron and Victoria and have a plan. We're going to go get Daenerys Targaryen. We may not even need her because Euron's just a crazy commander. And that's somebody who I could see conquer Westeros and Essos. I could see it.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is too, it's like, there's a shift there, right? So you could have, Balon could have had an alliance with King Robb. That would have been everything. Yes. That would have been everything, dude. Oh my God. It's over at that point. It's over, but he doesn't do it. Now, later on, his brothers will say, yeah, we need to ally with Dany, get some dragons, get, you know, expand the fleet even more and so on, make a marriage alliance. So they're okay to do it there. It's okay to do it, you know, with Dany, maybe because of the marriage thing. I don't know, but I mean, I don't know.
If Balon Greyjoy had allied himself with Robb Stark, because the Starks do not care about anything else outside of the North.
No. Yeah.
You could have been like, take Casterly Rock, have it.
Matt, I guarantee you King Robb would have been like, you want to be your own thing? You go right ahead. You want to rule whatever you got there, whatever you got from the other side, not River Run, right? Not, you know, there's tons of other
reach.
Stuff.
You want the reach. You want exactly. Casterly Rock. King's Landing, Storm's End, or just any of it.
Be your own thing. Do your own thing. Go back to the rating and stuff. That's fine. Just don't ever come to my shores. Don't ever come over there. Like, just leave us alone or we'll be at odds. And just kind of leave it on this tentative little peace agreement. Let time go by.
And that's something that happens. And that's something that happens quite a bit in this book, because then we can shift gears and talk about Renly and Stannis.
Right.
And it's like, my God, if you guys had allied, you would have just... The crazy thing about this book, I would say the craziest thing, is that somehow the Lannisters come out on top.
Yeah. Somehow.
The Lannisters come out on top. Crazy. There's a war started in which Balon Greyjoy is over here and he can easily go take and attack Casterly Rock. Robb Stark is pushing from the north. The Vale's just chilling out doing its own thing. The River Run is in the north are pushing down, and then you have Stannis and Renly challenging as well. We're all five kings, and somehow the Lannisters still make it.
It's crazy, man. And then you throw in, you know, Catelyn letting Jaime go, and one of the biggest pieces you have right there. It's a huge piece. Tywin is like his family and his legacy. It's a big freaking deal. Cersei will do. She's almost like irrational when it comes to her children and her brother. I mean, she'll do stuff that she just should not do. They had everything stacked against them, and somehow treachery inside of the North, you know, Bolton treachery, treachery from Theon. And then just again, Stannis being bullheaded. You know, one of the things about the Iron Islands is it's the whole iron price thing. It's their way of life. We're not going to abandon this just because, you know. Well, it hadn't gotten you anywhere, Balon. It hasn't gotten you anywhere. It's literally got you slapped down and your son taken from you and was a ward for Eddard Stark. Like, I think George is kind of showing us in some of his writing that, like, sometimes when you just hold on to something because it's tradition and it's your way of life and it has gotten you nowhere, you might want to reevaluate that and look at it and say, is this really a good thing? Why? I mean, am I holding on to it for what reason? Is it good? Should I maybe consider changing it up a little bit here? Because his brothers definitely did. They have a different strategy.
Yeah. Okay. Shifting gears here to another character. Just want to talk about a major departure, really, for a character. And I think this is something I think it picks up a little bit more, obviously, in A Dance with Dragons and certainly A Storm of Swords is Daenerys. In that, I just did the math. So in A Game of Thrones, including the prologue, there are 73 chapters, and Daenerys has 10, which is around 13%. But Daenerys is referenced a lot in a lot of the chapters. So even though she does feel far away, she is brought up quite a bit in other chapters with King, with Robert Baratheon, yeah, King Robert, talking about her and talking about how she's a threat. And so really, you could almost make an argument that she's, you know, probably she's probably like 15 to 20% of that book. Whereas in A Clash of Kings, she does have longer chapters, but she only has 5 chapters.
Yeah.
In A Clash of Kings, and she's not really referenced as much in this book as she was in A Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get, because again, this is A Clash of Kings and she is a future queen. Yeah. It's like, the whole focus is on Westeros way more than it is Essos. I mean, there's enough that we keep the storyline going, but you're right. It's a good point.
And then her chapters. So her chapters, obviously the biggest thing is, you know, the chapter one is them sort of walking around, right? The desert. I mean, and we know she has dragons now. And then ultimately the big one is the House of the Undying.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And that's where I said too, you don't get like some of that stuff in King's Landing. You're not getting visions and premonitions and stuff like that. You're getting little tiny bits about characters that might be magical and maybe former prophecies or, dragon dreams with Tyrion or stuff with, Cersei and, you know, the queen that's going to whatever undo her, which actually comes up later. Some of that stuff does, but right now you're getting all this in Essos and in the North in terms of, dragon dreams or prophecies. Pyat Pree is an interesting guy. All that stuff is crazy. That stuff that happens in the House of the Undying is nuts. And people still don't have it all figured out.
You know. And as you said, the big focus of this book is basically King's Landing. What's going on there? Which you can even start with, you know, Sansa chapters. So Sansa has 8 chapters. Tyrion has 15 chapters. And again, what's 15 divided by what, 70? I mean, that's 21% with just Tyrion.
Yeah.
And then 8 divided by 70, 11. So you're talking 36%, not including the Davos chapters that sort of revolve around King's Landing, or some of the Catelyn chapters which revolve around talking around Jaime Lannister. So it even sort of feels like what's going on with King's Landing. So yeah, this book is heavy, heavy on sort of King's Landing. What's going on there? Then our other focus, as we talked about Theon a little bit, Arya feels this is where her journey begins, where she is out on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be getting a little bit of that. And then even some of that is her serving as cupbearer for, well, Bruce Bolton, but then, Tywin shows up as well to Harrenhal. So we get a little bit of that.
Yeah, her story, that one also feels just so... It's different distant perspectives. Yeah, it's like it's she's in down with like the servants and the cooks and those who are being tortured, and you're getting more of the real, you're getting to see through her eyes real war and how it affects the countryside is what that seems like. And then you get the lords talking above that, right? So Arya's been underneath all of it, and she's always dirty in the show and depicted as running around just in the muck of it, right? So Yeah.
And then John's story, and then I'll come back to what I was going to talk about last. John's story is done very well. John has 8 chapters, so he's spread pretty evenly throughout. And we start to begin a little bit more of the North, meet Craster, and then we get his shift with Corrin Halfhand, and now we're set up to go be with Mance Rayder, which is really cool since he was built up to be such a big deal.
Yeah. I like that you mentioning the chapter numbers, because there's 8 there. Would you say 4 or 5 for Dany? So our 2 main characters, you can just read a handful of chapters, 10 to 13 chapters, and you've got their arc done in the story. And then you can actually do those 2 characters bounce back and forth between the books, like read John, read Dany, go to the next book, read John, read Dany, and so on, and just rinse and repeat. And you can get through, you'll find some interesting, like when we started to find the connection with Dany and the bells and some of the stuff that was, the madness that was referenced, a couple other things that I have to go back and look at my book. I'm all underlined, but I started noticing reoccurring phrases and lines and words and terminology around her character. And you're like, well, cheesy cow, that's right. Where a point of view read is really helpful.
Yeah, and some of these characters, Daenerys especially, Daenerys' first 15 chapters, which is a Game of Thrones and a Storm of Sword or a Clash of Kings, excuse me, you can pretty much read independently because it's not like she has any overlap. So some of these characters have overlap where if you want to get their story, you have to go back. Like in a Game of Thrones, some of the Arya chapters are really Sansa chapters, and some of the Sansa chapters, you know, because they're bickering or whatever.
Right.
And they'll go back and forth. Just like in A Clash of Kings, there's a little bit of Sansa and Tyrion. There's a little overlap, a little overlap there. So you'd have to get that as well. So now I'll come back here and I'll talk about what I actually think is to me is the coolest part of A Clash of Kings is starting at around chapter 57 and going to chapter 62. And that is the Battle of the Blackwater. And just the way that it's told in this back and forth between all of these different viewpoints. And, you know, we Sansa and everyone's getting ready for the battle. Then we cut to Davos and then we cut to Tyrion and everything just blew up. But still, they feel like they're going to lose. Then we cut back to Sansa inside and Cersei's talking about and Ellen Payne's there. And we're talking about, well, we might be taking poison and not giving them the opportunity. And so then we cut back to Sansa and everything seems to be, you know, okay, we won. So it's a very, very interesting block of chapters.
Yeah. Yeah, that is cool. I do like the different, it feels like a roller coaster ride. You're not sure who's going to win. And you're in your first read, you're like, wow, this is, I'm all over the place. Like, who's going to come out on top here? You really feel like it's going to be Stannis, even though Davos is suffering. Well, he suffers heavily. And then you think, okay, we're done. And then Stannis is pushing in. You're like, well, shoot, he's all right. You know, Tyrion's like, we don't have this under control. Cersei's like, we're going to kill ourselves. I mean, yeah, you're right. It is kind of all over the place. No one knows. It's the chaos of war and battle that he's trying to amplify.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is it. We have finished A Clash of Kings.
Let's go. Let's freaking go, man. Yeah, it feels good. It feels really good. I'm happy that we're going to dive off into Fire and Blood and kind of just, you know, go back, touch on the histories. I'm excited for A Storm of Swords. I probably will in my spare time, whenever that is. We're reading so many different things. But I do like doing the point of view read-throughs. And if you guys are interested in theorizing and checking in on some old theories, I would encourage you, especially in that story, to pick one and just go. You know, just pick John or pick Danny or pick whoever and just roll right on with their story and see what you get, because it's a lot of fun. I did that. I did that for this book as well as going chapter by chapter. And it just can show you quite a bit. So
yeah, and I think some of the characters who that's easiest to do, Daenerys I think is by far the easiest character to do a point of view read on, because you don't begin to get any overlap until like A Dance with Dragons. You get almost none. So she's I think the easiest to sort of do. John is also pretty easy, because again, so think about the characters who are sort of isolated. John is relatively easy. He starts to get some overlap as you get towards A Feast for or A Dance of Dragons. He'll have some overlap a little bit as well. He does have some as well in A Feast for Crows with Sam. Then you get some of the Samwell Tarly chapters sort of do that as well. So pretty interesting. Arya.
Yeah.
The Game of Thrones is really about the only time she has much overlap. And then it's sort of, you can just read hers. But then just be warned, because some characters like Theon, well, then you have to start reading Reek chapters. So the name sort of changes. Like there's a Cat of the Canals chapter. That's an Arya chapter.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But it's fun. I highly recommend people try it. And see what you think. Let us know. Write us a raven. Tell us what you thought of it. And if you found anything interesting, those themes or phrases or words that are associated with one or one character.
Yeah, absolutely. So awesome. All right, guys. Well, with that, we want to thank you. And let me break this down here before we do our official outro. So we're going to be doing Fire and Blood next time, the chapter Heirs of the Dragon. It's about a 2-hour audiobook chapter, and it's also really long if you're reading the text. So we're going to go about halfway through that. So we're going to do this chapter in two parts. Heirs of the Dragon, A Question of Succession. So if you're listening to the audiobook, it's around 57 minutes. If you're reading the text, it's right before the tourney in which they are named once they come out of it, it's the blacks and the greens. So it's about halfway through the chapter. So if you want, anyway, so as always, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Fire and Blood, Heirs of the Dragon, A Question of Succession, Part 1.
Yeah. If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us that raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
We will see you next time, and remember that winter is coming.